All right, Big John, Big Baby, getting you started. Welcome into a Tuesday here on Jaguars Today, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. You know it's a special day when you can say hello to Ryan O'Halloran on the airwaves from the Florida Times Union. What's up, Rhino? How are you, bud?
Good, good. We may be on our way to the hottest day of camp.
You think so? I thought yesterday was a pretty steamy one with the noted lack of breeze. I think I've felt more breeze this morning.
There's already a breeze.
Yeah, than yesterday. But we get to sit under the tent, so you'll have to report back to us how hot it gets over the next 2 hours.
The first hour yesterday, there wasn't a single air moving.
I would agree with that.
You guys came out just in time.
Yes. Yesterday was steamy. Today's going to be steamy. But, hey, they got work to get done. Let's go back to the scrimmage. We haven't talked to you since the scrimmage on Saturday night. Certainly read your write-ups on it in the TU. Positives. What positives did you take away from that?
I don't really take a ton away from it, in positive or negative. I mean, you know, you saw what a tight end like Julius Thomas can do against a linebacker. That's a positive. You know, Allen Robinson going out and getting the ball, that's a positive. In terms of defense, it looked like they knew what the snap count was. They've been practicing against these guys for 3 months.
Right.
So they, you know, took advantage of that coming off the edges. But I guess the biggest thing is T.J. Yeldon looks like he runs at a different gear than anybody else on this team. You know, they're going to make him, quote-unquote, earn the starting job. But he's going to be their guy. He should be their guy.
Do you think opening day that he will be? That we were just talking with Jeff. He said, who's the most fantasy-relevant guy here? If you have a starting running back, certainly fantasy-relevant at any time. Right now listed as a co-starter with Denard Robinson, you expect it to be really the Yeldon show with Robinson being his primary backup?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect it to be the Yeldon-Gerhardt show more so, and then Denard pitching in a little bit. I think Toby you know, we'll carve out a decent niche as that third down guy, and then TJ will be the main guy.
And then, so if TJ gets a spell and he comes out, let's say every third series or whatever, who is that guy then? Is that Robinson? Is that Gerhardt?
I think
right
it'd be Robinson off the hop. You know, sort of, you know, they like sort of the differences in their running styles. You know, be at the change of pace, and then they feel confident with Gerhardt in any kind of role. First, second, or third down.
Do you think is maybe the most overly maligned player coming off of last year because of the way the season started for him? Granted, it never, even when he got presumably healthy towards the end of the year, never looked like the zone blocking scheme was a great fit for him, but it's tough to know what he would have done had he not had that horse collar tackle right off the bat.
Yeah, unfairly maligned. You know, because he got injured in week one. That forced him to miss a couple games. Well, he sucked it up for three or four games there. Wasn't effective because he wasn't healthy. So, I mean, he said it at the end of last year. If he would have done it over again, he probably would have shut himself down early, come back stronger later. So, I mean,
it's tough when you just got that new contract, though, and you're trying
to
prove that you're worth it.
Yeah, but I think this year, you know, he goes back to what he did well for the Vikings for those years.
You know, it's you talk about the most overly maligned guy. Let's just talk about the most maligned guy on this roster, and that's Luke Jokel, who's in the crosshairs for this fan base right now and didn't look great on Saturday night, actually looked pretty bad at times on Saturday night. I know you said you don't want to take too much out of what happens at a scrimmage for these guys, but the questions that you have about Luke Jokel continue to remain unanswered going into 2015 to this point.
Yeah, and they're going to remain unanswered until, I would say, a month or two into the regular season. When he gets during these pass rushing drills out here in practice, when he gets beat, it's because he gets pushed back. And, you know, teams are going to watch film of these preseason games.
You think they might bull rush him?
Bull rush him. test that lower body strength that he's supposed to be working on. So I mean, I think they have all the confidence that Luke Jokel is going to be okay. You know, everybody else is right to be in the opinion of show me.
How do you see the other two battles going right now with left guard and center?
Well, I don't think left guard is a battle right now. AJ Cann has not taken one first team snap, so it's basically in Zane Beadle's hands. If he can get through the first two games unscathed, he'll be the guy. Center.
We'd say the first two regular season games.
Preseason games.
You know, yeah, gotcha. Unless he has some big setback and looks, you know, a mess out there, you can expect him to start the season.
And then at center, I still think it's going to be Wisniewski. I mean, they're holding true to that every other day thing. Both of them are going to get a preseason game start, I understand. So, but I think Wisniewski, they just want to see him go through a game or two with the shoulder. Then I think they'll make that decision.
Who's been, over the last few days, whether it's practice, scrimmage, defensively, caught your eye?
I've been on the Aaron Colvin train since he debuted last year. I think he should be the starter opposite.
It looks like it's trending that way, right? Everybody seems to think it will be. House being the other guy?
Yeah. House is definitely their number one. But, Colvin's getting some first-team stuff. They tested him in the scrimmage on Saturday night on the same series, go inside, outside, see how he can adjust to that. He did that. And I think, if you want to get your best players on the field, he deserves to be on the field. And then 60% of the time he'll play inside, and that's an opportunity for Demetrius McCray to play outside.
Quick update. Did you see T.J. Yeldon come out to the field? Not in the red jersey today. He's just in pads, so it looks like he could be a go.
He's going to be non-contact again today.
Okay.
And here's your full injury report. Mercedes and Allen Robinson have a day off. Miller.
Veteran, kind of just maintenance stuff.
Neil Sterling, add him to the injury list. Hamstring, he's out. Roy Miller, Jared Odrick, both out again, along with Lee, Thompson, Gratz, Sample, Clemens, and Marks.
Now, did Roy Miller, yesterday we noted when he went out there, looked like, okay, we're going to see him out there in some action. And was it a setback yesterday for Roy Miller?
Well, no, because he didn't. He started stretching, and then they pulled him out. So I'm guessing there was a little bit of a malfunction at the junction there. He thought he was maybe practicing. They had him scheduled for a day off because he didn't get as far as the stretching.
And they're like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, it's like, "Hey, Roy,
lay down,
big fella.
Take a rest, there, buddy." Odrick, we noted yesterday he had the wrap on his compression sleeve on his left leg. Gus made it sound after practice yesterday like it was very minor. Said I wouldn't even be surprised if he's out there tomorrow, which he's not going to be today. But early impressions of him, certainly in the scrimmage, were. Guy maybe has a little bit more, push than just hold the point of attack. I think we've been led to believe because he's replacing Red Bryant. Red Bryant wasn't a penetrating type guy. That Odrick is going to be more of a stationary, occupy a couple of blockers guy. It looked like he's got some pass rush skill.
Well, that's the other thing that the dimension he adds is he's going to be able to move forward. He's going to be able to give you a pass rush on early downs instead of just trying to occupy his blocker. So. When Jared's been out there, he's been pretty impressive. Just he's such a big, powerful guy that they've already shifted into maintenance mode, which to me it's a half of a red flag, I guess, that happened this early in camp with Roy Miller. You expected to come off the surgery, but I think it bears monitoring with Odrick.
All right, what are you gonna be writing about over the next couple of days leading into the first preseason game?
A couple camp reports. Hayes Carlion in Thursday's paper is going to talk to some guys who haven't played football in a while. First game, guys who missed last year with injury.
Gotcha.
Were out of the league last year, et cetera. And then in Friday's paper, going to sort of delve into first-year offensive coordinator. How much do you show?
In the preseason.
Yeah.
Right.
So sort of the way, pros and cons of not showing anything or showing a lot.
Right. You don't want to show, but you want to –
What's
make sure
balance?
you're good, right?
Yeah.
And so you're right.
Well, and you may want to give other teams something to think about, which is why you see some trick plays sometimes in
look.
The preseason, that kind of thing too. So there is a balance there.
Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter at Ryan O'Halloran, and of course in the pages of the Florida Times Union. You are welcome to our shade as long as you like, but we're going to cut you loose. thank you for your service.
First of all, is like, would it kill them to use this field?
I thought they were going to. Are they not using this field today?
Well, if they
we saw the cameras on the near field today, so we expect we're going to have some teamwork on this,
well, this
near
would be
field.
This would be a pleasant surprise.
Yes, especially for the fans in attendance, because is it a daunting walk for you to go across?
No. It's all about the view.
Like, from here it is, no question.
Well, on that third field, if fans who come here are that black fence against the far field,
yes,
at about 20 degrees.
It does do that.
so that's Yeah.
All right. Get out there and sweat, brother. Good to see you.
All right, guys.
Thank you, man. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, popping in with us. We got a full plate today, Tony. As always, Jeff Loggeman is going to join us from the Jaguar broadcast team, as well as Brent Martin. Oh, the band's getting back together. I like it. We should do more radio with Brent Martin.
I know.
Why did we never think of that in the past?
I try every time you leave to get him to come sit with me for a couple hours, and he refuses. This is the first time he's
like
cracked
you.
A mic with us. Since we left.
It's practical. Is it? It may be. Is it the?
He came on for the mock draft. That's all he's done with.
Thanks, Brent.
Yeah.
Way to leave us hanging, Dob. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles from yesterday following practice, and keep you up to date with everything going on out on practice fields GP and S, as we have dubbed them.
A lot of G
over the
today.
Course of the last. Let's hope we get a lot of G today, Tony. That's what we're looking forward to. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Coming back with Jeff Loggeman. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, glad you're along with us. Jaguars today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Forgot to mention the question of the day, which was inspired, Tony, by the Madden 2016 ratings, which just came out. The Jags, as an overall team, got a rating of 73, second lowest in the game, ahead of only the Tennessee Titans. So, inspired by that, we asked folks to throw it in Madden's face and tell us today how many teams the Jaguars will finish with a better record than.
All right.
In 2015. Name those teams. Somebody said, hey, we only have 140 characters. I said, look, you can abbreviate like N-E. We know you think they're better than the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
I-N-D. Or you could just skip ahead and say all. You can do that if you
We've
want
We've had a couple
well.
Of those.
You can go ahead and say all and move on to the next one. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at the Florida Blue practice field. Now joined by Jeff Loggeman of the Jaguar broadcast crew and, of course, a longtime Jacksonville Jaguar himself. What's up, Loggy? How are
What's
you?
What's up? Doing good.
What did you make of the scrimmage on Saturday night? What stood out to you from a positive standpoint?
I think first and foremost is just the way that the offense kind of bounced back after a slow start. You know, but I also you got to give some credit to the defense. That front with Roy Miller and Jared Odrick and Tyson Alualu and Andre Branch, they played really well in the first two series. Telvin Smith made some plays. Paul Posluszny was flying around. So, I mean, you got excited about the defense. But, you know, I mean, most people, when you go to a scrimmage, you want to see offensive production. But you did see it, and you saw Blake Bortles kind of do what he does best, which is the drop in the bucket throws. The throw that he had to Allen Robinson was a tremendous throw. The throw to Julius Thomas, you couldn't ask for better coverage out of Dan Scuda on that play. And it was a perfectly thrown ball. You know, so, I mean, things like that get you excited. And I think that once you get into games or scrimmages or when the lights get bright, so to speak, that we're going to see Blake Bortles even more improved than what we see on the practice field on the day-to-day basis.
On the other side of the coin, and we don't want to take anything too positive or negative out of one scrimmage. It's a bit of a glorified practice, really. But based on what you saw, not only there, but through the first week plus of training camp, what concerns you right now about this football?
Well, the safety position is still a big concern. And I wish that the young draft pick was back out on the field, James Sample, to where you could get more talent, more competition. I mean, Sergio Brown is there right now, but, I mean, Sergio Brown was let go in Indianapolis because he was a core special teamer only. You know, so you'd like to have that position kind of get firmed up a little bit. But I think the competition at cornerback is helping that, and it will help that. But sooner or later, though, you got to make a decision at the safety spot. You know, I've come to the conclusion that the center spot is what it is. You know, at some point, the coaching staff is going to have to make a decision, either Wisniewski or Bowanko. I think they're about even right now as far as talent-wise, but what type of player do you want? Do you want a guy that's more a little bit more physical, more of a grappler, is not going to wow you, but it's never going to get you killed, and that's Wisniewski? Or do you go with a guy that maybe has a higher ceiling in the long run, who's more athletic, who is still young, but definitely has more upside, and that's Luke Bowanko? Because, I mean, you're not going to find out that much more.
Who would you put, Jeff Loggeman, who would you want in there? I think I know the answer, but I'll let you speak for yourself. And who do you think ultimately they settle on, if it remains?
It's a hard answer to have, and the reason why is, what are you going to do at right guard? You know, if Zane Beatles was having a tremendous camp.
Left guard.
A left guard.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying the center and the guard position, to me, are really one. So that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, when you say, what are you going to do at right guard? You're Brandon
left
Leonard.
Guard.
That's what I meant.
Because that's the key. If you're going to leave Zane Beadles at left guard and he's having a tremendous camp, then I think you go with maybe the guy that has more upside, Luke Polanco, who's younger.
Maybe a vet and a young guy combination.
Sure. But right now, Zane Beadles is not having a tremendous camp. You know, and A.J. Cann has clearly shown that he can do things physically that Zane Beadles just can't do. You know, A.J. Cann is physical. He plays with power. He plays with knee bend. He gets hips in the motion. And Zane Beadles doesn't do that.
See, it's interesting, Tony. I mean, Ryan O'Hallander sat here, right? And in his opinion, Zane Beadles has been the clear front runner at that left guard spot through his eyes.
Well, and in O'Halloran basically said A.J. Cann isn't getting any first-team reps yet, and that we're 2 weeks into this and he's still not getting any first-team reps indicates something to him. I know going back and watching the scrimmage, I see the same thing out of A.J. Cann. There's an athletic, physical something there that Zane Beadles just can't do. I'm all for not handing him the job until he earns it because he is a rookie going up against a veteran guy. But he looks like he's the better player than Zane Beadles.
Do you think he'll earn it?
I think at some point A.J. Cann will be your starting left guard.
But not necessarily to open the season.
Not necessarily to open the season. But Zane Beadles has to show more than I think that he's shown so far.
What's missing?
Power. Playing with power. Playing consistent. You know, when one offensive lineman plays well, the other guy next to him can play better. And I don't know if Zane Beadles necessarily is playing at a level that makes Luke Jokel any better. I'm not trying to pin, you know, Luke Jokel's development on Zane Beadles, but you have an unproven player on the left side. And see, that's the hard part. That's where you got to kind of make a decision based on a leap of faith somewhat, because you have a left tackle who's still developing, and you have a center position that you have a question mark at. So in a perfect world, Zane Beadles is worth every penny that you paid him, and he's consistent, and he's the man. And then you say, okay, well, Luke Jokel's going to be fine because we've got consistency next to him. The center position, he's going to be fine. We can go with maybe a guy that has more upside because we know that Zane Beadles is consistent, and he's going to be there week in and week out. I don't know what Ryan's watching, but I don't see that high level of consistency out of Zane Beadles. And to say that he's a clear front runner, to me, is grossly overstated.
And to be fair, as Tony said, Ryan, maybe I'm overstating what Ryan said, but he did, the way he feels is because Beatles is getting all the first team work.
That doesn't mean anything.
Whereas Polanco and Wisniewski are rotating.
Doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything yet. And the reason why those other two guys are rotating is because they have both played. Whereas A.J. Cann has not played. He's a rookie. He's an unproven player. And the thing you always want to do is to make rookies earn it. And so why not keep A.J. Cann as a second teamer to make him work harder to get to the point where he is the starter? So it's a very different,
gotcha,
I guess you could say, makeup of what the battle is.
You know, the cornerback position you mentioned a moment ago, Jeff, and I think Nick Marshall is making it really tough to not put him on the 53 at this point. He seems to be excelling with what they're asking him to do at the cornerback position. And it feels like it would be really hard to hide him on the practice squad at this point. He would be on an active roster somewhere in the NFL. Do you feel the same way?
Well, I don't know if it would be necessarily hard to hide a guy like that because he played quarterback in college, and most people don't have an evaluation of Nick Marshall as a cornerback. So, but he's definitely got talent. He definitely has shown some things athletically that makes you get, you know, a little bit excited about him. But at the same token, a lot of the nuances of the position, he's still far behind, but he's got the athleticism. The interesting thing to me at the corner position is the battle with Aaron Colvin and Demetrius McCray. The depth chart came out. Look, some of the depth charts that they put out by different teams in the league, you don't put too much into it. I mean, they have some of the guys on the offensive line aren't even at the position that they're playing right now. They're just trying to make sure that they got the depth proper. You got three guys at each position. But when there's notable two guys listed as a starter, that's the coach saying, hey, look, we want to make sure that these guys understand that this is a competition. Now, the rest of it, you know, don't worry about it. But we want to make sure that these guys understand that they're in competition. They need to play well to win the job. And listing Aaron Colvin and Demetrius McCray as co-starters on the depth chart, that's a conscious decision by the coaching staff. Now, that's something that Ryan O'Halloran can point to and say, there's something to that. There's something to that. You know, and Eric Coleman, I said it on our show, last year, that I expect him to be a starter.
Glad he said our show. How about that?
Well, it is when I'm on with you on Tuesday.
You're damn right it is.
And I still believe that Aaron Colvin offers something significantly more than the other quarterbacks because he has tremendous ball skills. The two interceptions that he had in one day last week were great plays. One of them was a near interception, but didn't quite control it all the way to the ground. But the other one was a pick six. You know, and that's the thing that was lacking out of the secondary last year was playmaking ability on the ball.
Speaking of our show, Jeff Logman joins us next Tuesday. We start it back up on a full-time Tuesday basis, and we'll look forward to watching the game through your eyes after you get a chance to have the film breakdown. Jeff, I want to talk about the kicker position, something we've just taken for granted over the last several years. Obviously, Josh Scobie being the incumbent, and you see a guy like Jason Myers come in, you think, oh, camp leg. You know, but at a certain point, you know, Scobie will move on. Whether he'll retire or go to another team, that's just the nature of the National Football League. Is it too soon to say that this is a legitimate competition this year? How much of a chance do you give Jason Myers, if he excels in actual game action, of being the guy that sticks around here?
It's not too soon because I talked about it Saturday night during the scrimmage. You know, I made it a point to bring it up, you know, because it's kind of flying under the radar. You know, Myers has been kicking the ball all offseason, consistent, long. I'm not talking, you know, 75% and has had distance. I don't know if I've seen him miss in practice, but maybe one time prior to yesterday where he had two, where one he was wide right and one he dinged it off the post from 60. But during the scrimmage, he kicked one that was, I think, from 55 that was halfway up the pipes.
Right.
You know? And so that's really the one thing you want to find out about a young kicker like that is when the lights get bright and his game conditions is the consistency and the concentration and the cold demeanor still there, because you can kick 1,000 balls out here in practice. It's not the same as it is with 70,000 people in the games on the line. Josh Scobie has proven that he can make those. But Josh Scobie's in his 12th year. He has had some issues staying healthy. He is expensive relative to, you know, other kickers around the National Football League.
Yeah.
And you want to build to the future. I mean, Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley have made it very clear that they want to build a perennial contender. At some point, they need to get to that. If you get to that, is Josh Scobie in his 15th, 16th year still going to be that type of guy? I don't know. But, I mean, to me, this is a real competition. Myers has been tremendously consistent, and it's clear that he has a stronger leg than Josh Scobie.
I know we'll hear from you during the pregame on Friday, but we won't get the chance to talk to you again between now and then. What are you looking for on Friday night, week one against the Steelers?
Well, I really want to focus in on that center position. I think you have to make the decision after this first preseason game to allow a comfort level to start to exist between Blake Bortles and the center, and then to go ahead and move on and see what you're going to do elsewhere. And the reason I say that is that, look, Wisniewski has played guard in the past. If Puenko is going to be your center, start getting him some reps at guard and let him see if he can get in that competition with the left guard spot if Zane Beatles isn't going to play at a high enough level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that needs to get settled. The wide receiver position, to me, is still a huge question mark. Huge question mark. You know, there's a lot of guys that are there that you get excited about. We're excited about Allen Robinson. Allen Hurns is a pro's pro. I love the guy. Love him. I think he is as good as there is, consistent. But his ceiling is only so high. Marquise Lee can't stay healthy. You know, I want to see Julius Thomas put in bubble wrap until the regular season. I don't even want to see him in the preseason one bit. And I want to make mention of one other guy that we really haven't mentioned and not a lot of people have talked about. Mercedes Lewis is having maybe the best camp I've ever seen him have in a training camp yet. He is back to being an absolute dominant blocker, play in and play out. It's embarrassing how bad that he can make certain guys look when he blocks. And he's back to that level. Mercedes Lewis is back.
Is that, could it be simply the fact that he knew that was going to be more of his focus this year and he did, you know what I mean?
Think about how much he's been hurt over the last couple of years, you know? And look, sometimes it's not a trend. Sometimes it's aberrations, and you hope that with Mercedes, you know, being hurt the last couple of years, that it's an aberration. But when you lose the motor of what you're really all about, which is power for Mercedes, and he's had lower leg injuries, knee injuries. To be able to get that back and being healthy, that's a tremendous boost for him in the way that he can play. I love the way he's playing and the combination of him and Julius Thomas. I'd love to put both of them in bubble wrap.
Yeah,
all preseason and let them get ready for the regular season.
We're going to see them on the field together a lot, it looks like, this year. Logs, we'll wrap up with this from the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. for Jeff, can Nick Marshall learn the free safety position, or is he better at cornerback, or is it, are we way too concerned about overwhelming
a guy who's been
a quarterback?
You can't do that. I mean, that's, you know, when you bring a guy in, much like Jared Odrick, you know, Jared Odrick, and I'll get back to Nick Marshall in a second, but Jared Odrick knows how to play three technique. So, and I know he's not practicing. He's got a little injury issue. But you don't want him to come in here and play three technique right now, because he knows how to play three technique, and let him learn the four. Because when you do get Sendarek Marks back, that's going to be your strongest lineup, is having both of them on the field at the same time. With a young player that's making the conversion from one side of the ball to the other, that's a tremendous adjustment. So you can't take a young player like that and say, we're going to play you at corner, and then after 2 weeks say, you know what, we're kind of deficient at safety, let's go ahead and move you to safety. I mean, the poor kid's head would spin out of control. Now, down the road, absolutely. But this year, no, you really have
eventually,
to let him
though,
focus in. Yeah, down the road, maybe.
Perhaps.
But not
yeah,
this
hell
year.
Of an athlete.
Isn't that in part, though, why, what's been so impressive about Colvin? I know it's not technically two different positions, but his ability to play inside and outside of that cornerback spot and how much they're putting on him to do that.
Well, and see, last year, same type of situation, but he's been on the same side of the ball, you know, his whole playing career, and that they let him focus in on nickel, and that was it. You know, when he was coming back from the ACL, nickel, 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 and that's it. Once he started to get kind of in the groove of nickel, then they started allowing him to have reps at the other position, which was corner. So, you know, it's the same type of situation. Allow the players to get a comfort level at one position where they feel good about it and have confidence in it before you start to allow them to go to other places.
He is Jeff Loggeman. You can follow him on Twitter at logs56, L-O-G-S-5-6, and you'll hear him, of course, on the pregame and during the game broadcast of the Jags taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers, up in the booth with Frank Frangie and Tony Boselli. And can't wait next Tuesday to get you back in on a regular basis on our show, the three of us together once again.
Looking forward to it.
Logs, good to see you, bud. Thanks for stopping by. There he goes. Jeff Loggeman, ladies and gentlemen, with an eye on the film and a great sideline view of everything going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars here in training camp, Tony. And that's an interesting way of looking at it, I think, with the offensive line combinations.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to put Bolanco out there with A.J. Cann, even though they may be the upside guys? You're talking about a year's experience, and that year came from a sixth-round draft pick. Or do you maybe go with a steady Eddie who knows the offense, knows the snap counts, knows all those things, and Wisniewski, and you pair him with Cann, or you go Beatles with the upside guy with Bolanco?
Sure, and I think it's the difference between talking to a guy who played in the NFL for 10 years and guys who haven't played at all. Right? They understand that balance that needs to be there between young and old. And I think that's why, you know, guys like Jeff and Big Bo, when they're looking at that team last year, they're like, I don't know what I would do. Right? You know, if I got put on the field with all these rookies, I don't know how I would react to that kind of thing, because they knew what it was like to play with rookies and the expectations you have for guys that young coming into the league. I think there is something to vets that are saying, hey, let's balance it out as much as we can with these guys. Certainly the most talented guy needs to play, but balance it out where we can.
All right, we got to take a quick time out here. We're going to come back. Brent Martineau going to join us, of course, from Action Sports and 1010XL fame. And we'll do that in just a moment on a Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. If you'd like to get in and make your opinion heard, 641-1010, which also doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We get some more texts we'll get to as well. The Twitter and Facebook question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you to list the teams the Jags will finish ahead of in the standings this year, inspired by the Madden 16 ratings, which ranked the Jags ahead of only the Tennessee Titans. Will get your thoughts on that a little bit later on the show. Also hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles following yesterday's practice. All that coming up and more. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Hey, glad you're with us out here at training camp. Second to last day, Tony. Tomorrow we'll be out here.
I know, it's sad.
It is sad, man. These shows are so much fun for us to do. I hope they're fun for the listeners as well. But, you know, you get a chance to hop in with all our different friends and cohorts.
Get out of the dungeon.
This guy. See, now this guy, he won't stop by when it's just you, I hear.
I was convinced that Martineau was just unwilling to ever do any radio with me ever again. I was convinced every time that you go out of time, I ask him. I was like, and I'll give him like a whole week, a range of days. I was like, can you do a day? and he's always on vacation, this guy.
Hey, he's scarred from our time together. What did we do? What did we had about a year, a little over a year?
About, you know, I've been trying to go back and think about the timing of it all. I think it was about a year.
About a year.
And now it's been a little bit more than a year on the afternoon stuff.
You miss
I think.
Us, don't you?
I do.
You really do now.
It's a crowded room in the afternoon.
Woo-wee, boy.
Hey, I raised my hand. Hey, guys, over here.
Right, at least for us, it's just three. Hey, you're fighting.
Country's walking in now. He heard me lament Martineau not playing all with me last night.
What are you going to do, man? How are you? Everything
I'm good, man. Everything's great. And by the way, after listening for the last half hour on my way in, I'm convinced that Tyler Shatley will be the starter at left guard.
Because it went both ways in a hurry, didn't it, on that one? Wow. Lagerman was laying down the law on that. I understand Ryan O'Halloran's point.
Yeah, I do.
If a guy gets all the first-team reps, you got to consider him. And as he said, if this continues for two more weeks, you know, going into preseason game three.
He's listed as a starter on the first depth chart, too. I mean, they split it up at center, right? They didn't split it up at left guard, but I think Lagerman makes a good point and a valid one in that, look, he's a rookie. You know, I mean, Beatles is competing with a rookie for that starting left guard spot. You don't want to hand him anything, even this early, as far as 1 and 1A. You make him earn that spot, be better than Beatles for a month and a half if he's going to be the starting left guard.
Especially because you didn't target drafting a left guard. He kind of fell into your lap and you felt he was too good of a value, maybe a top 40 type player. But how have those positions gone in your eyes and from what you've heard talking to coaches and players behind the scenes, left guard and center?
I think the one concern continues to be about this line when you hear guys like Lagerman say strength. They don't have the strength. Do they have the strength? If that's what's in question, and that was a huge question with Luke Jokel, continues to be.
Yeah.
He added the 12, 13, 14 pounds, and hopefully he's trying to keep it on out here in the heat. But is he strong enough to not get bull rushed? I mean, that was the book on Jokel as soon as the season started. They played Philadelphia, and I know for a fact in those meeting rooms in Philadelphia, they were talking about bull rushing Luke Jokel.
Right.
So that's the book on him in the NFL. So if you don't have that, in fairness to Luke, I think he was such a young guy, still is such a young guy that, you know, maybe he hadn't developed that man strength yet, so there is time for him. But when you're talking about Beatles now with strength problems, how do you get that?
There's nowhere to go.
You know
There's
what I
no
mean?
Athletic upside there.
So that's what concerns me a little bit when you're talking strength. I think these younger guys, okay, you can put weight on, you can grow, you can do some things. But Beatles have been around for a while. If that's the problem spot, then that's a major concern because these guys recognize that and they get pushed back. We had it on TV last night. We had Beatles going against Ryan Davis, just got bull rushed all the way back into the quarterback in a one-on-one drill. And then Chris Smith beat him two different times, one on a hold, so it wasn't that bad. But, you know, that was the three plays we saw with Beatles last night. So it continues to be a problem along that left side.
And, you know, oftentimes when the offense has success against the defense, we don't know because they're only going up against the team that they're not going to be playing on Sundays, right? But in this case, you know, it's one thing for Ryan Davis, who a lot of people feel is kind of a breakout player that if you've been paying attention. But Chris Smith was mostly on the practice squad last year. You know,
and in fairness, he didn't bull rush him on that one. He kind of just beat him. And Chris Smith's had a nice camp, too.
But regardless, if you are the guy that is the incumbent, should be holding down you got to beat that guy.
You got to hold that block.
You got to beat the late round.
I don't know if these guys have won enough of those battles to convince anyone that there's this confidence about the offensive line. And I had a confidence because of what Dave Caldwell did in the offseason. He really invested in that line and trying to make the competition better. And it looked like a big upgrade. And quite frankly, guys, be worse than it was last year.
Well, I think Parnell will be a big upgrade at his spot. I think Linder will continue to get better. So I think that side of the line, I think you feel like they have two decent options at center.
No doubt.
One's, you know, not necessarily Alex Mack, but whatever.
No, I like him, though.
So from center over, you feel pretty good. And then you come to the other side. Now, Cann has the strength. I don't think anybody questions his strength, but does he have the pass blocking savvy? I think you could throw him in there as a run blocker right now, and you'd probably be more effective. But if you're worried about your left tackle protecting, and then you get a guy in there who is unrefined in pass blocking, you could be in big trouble early in the season.
Yeah, they may have to take the necessary of the two evils, though, right? Because it's the blind side. You don't want him getting hit. You don't want number five getting hit like that. So they may have to take the stronger guy eventually. I'm a big believer in it's Beatles and Wisniewski that start this thing out. I just have thought that
that's
all
what we thought
before
too.
Camp. And just from a logical standpoint,
mm-hmm.
they're young everywhere else. You want some experience on that line. And I say this, Wisniewski to me is going to win that job as long as the shoulder's fine. Because he was about to make $6-7 million, guys, in free agency. I mean, he was one of the, I wouldn't say premier centers, but it's a coveted position It's a scarce position in the NFL.
And he's
so
young.
He's about to get paid.
He was durable.
Yeah.
Prior to this, he had played 61 out of 64 games, started them all.
So I think he's hit. I know they have him on the same line right now, but I really believe he is the guy in this Olsen offense. It just makes a lot of sense. That's not a knock on Bowenko. I just think they've upgraded that spot so much, as long as he's healthy, that he will be the guy in that position.
What do you like from what you've seen from the running back position thus far? I know Saturday night I really liked the way T.J. Yeldon ran the ball.
Yeah, man, I thought that whole unit was the best unit of the night. I thought, you know, we're looking for something out of that running back spot, and if you really identify, I know the receivers and Thomas and Robinson, they made plays, but overall I thought I saw a lot of good things out of Denard. I mean, I thought Denard Robinson had a couple nice runs, some hard runs.
I did too.
I think he's really settled into that position, and I think we've all overlooked him because of T.J. Yeldon, but I think he's clearly that second guy, if not battling for the first. I believe Yeldon will be the starter. He is fun to watch. I pumped the brakes on everybody got so excited in the spring about Yeldon. And I was like, listen, he hasn't even thrown a pad on here. I'm not going to do that. I've done it. You know, I started the Sunshine and Rainbow Club.
Even before Vaselli, maybe.
Yeah. And so I'm not going to do that on this guy. Well, I've been really impressed. He is fun to watch. He looks good. He looks the part. And he looks different than the other guys. But as a unit, I thought they were great Saturday night.
That's a position we've said it for so long. You either have it or you don't, I think. And now Denard's trying to become that way. It's a different story if you're changing positions. That's such a rarity, though. When you come into the league, you either have the instincts to run at that level or you don't. And rarely do you see running backs struggle. Now they'll struggle in pass protection, mm-hmm, and blitz pickup, things like that.
Maybe receiving a little bit.
Rarely, yeah, will they struggle actually running the ball early in their career and then all of a sudden turn it around. So usually these guys hit the ground running, no pun intended.
But you like their depth there, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, even Bernard Pierce is
good. I'll be honest with you. I thought Bernard Pierce was an absolute stiff when they signed him, and he has looked better than I ever expected him to look. That doesn't mean I expect him to be an integral part of their offense this year, but yeah, you feel comfortable that you've got some decent options out there. I mean, even Toby has looked better, and you know, we remarked on it. Toby's not going to get any benefit of the doubt based on the season he had, but you know, part of the reason he had that season was an injury in game one. I'm not saying that's the entirety of the reason. He may not be a great fit, but I certainly think he's better than he showed early in the year last year, because he was hampered. And you know, as we talked about earlier today, if he had an option, if he had gone back and done it differently, might have sat out. But it's tough to do that when you're the new guy that just signed the big money deal and you're getting your shot for the first time, right?
So yeah, I just feel like what they have to do the last couple of years, and you guys know this, they've had to play certain guys in spots. They've had to push the limits with some of these guys and just hope and expect that they would maybe thrive in it. And the running back situation was a lot like that last year. Just kind of didn't know, especially with Gearhart getting hurt. That was a little bit of a leap of faith. But I think now you don't really have that so much. I mean, you have a little bit. If Jokel doesn't work out, you don't really have anything there.
No.
So you're struggling. But and I think safety's a little bit like that. I agree with everybody else. But overall, I think they kind of feel comfortable, and they built the back end of this roster. I think that's the best thing. And they're more athletic than I've ever seen this team. You know, with Nick Marshall and Denard and some of these great athletes they have, and
right,
Allen Robinson jumping
Colvin,
out of the gym, and
yeah,
Colvin and Marquise, Kelvin, if he ever gets on the field. So, I mean, I've been here 8 years. I've never seen a team so athletic here at Jags headquarters. So I love that.
All right, as we wrap up here, I've been asking everybody about this since it became an issue, I guess, on Saturday night on both the Jaguars.com and the 1010 broadcast. The kicking competition. Is Scobie going to hold off this young Jason Myers with the cannon leg?
Yeah, I think he does. And I've heard rumblings for a couple months now that this was going to be a competition. This wasn't a surprise to them that Myers could kick the heck out of the football. But who do you want there? Game one, Carolina, 3 seconds left, 48-yard field goal. Who are you taking? A guy that you've never seen kicked, or Josh Scobie, who's done it before? To me, that wins out the day. Money's not an issue, all that stuff. And for the folks that say building toward the future, I get it. You don't want to let a guy go if he could be your kicker for 10 years. But the Jags got to win now. The building part, I get.
They can't let the close ones
start,
get away.
You've got to start winning games, too. So you've got to have a certain amount of guys that can do that. Remember the mistake Dave Caldwell said he made last year? Too many young guys.
Right.
Well, Josh Scobie, in that position, is a veteran, a reliable guy. My thinking is, if I'm Dave Caldwell, if I cut Scobie, who's a fan favorite, by the way, but that doesn't factor in, and Myers is miserable and misses, Boy, that was a bad move, and I'm going to take some big-time heat. The safe play here for me is Josh Goodwin.
I agree with the safe play there. And I, as T-Wig was saying yesterday, you don't want your GM to be making all the safe plays, but there is somewhat of a balance here to be struck. And I've compared it to when the Marlins in their expansion year signed Brian Harvey, an established closer. You're like, what do you need him for? Well, don't let the close ones get away and help the young team's psyche by winning those close games, much like here with Scobie. Like you said, 48-yarder, final seconds of week one, I'll take Scobie. You know, a year from now, that may turn out to be the wrong pick if all of a sudden Myers is the next Steven Gostkowski or whoever that's going to be a, you know, a 10-year superstar. But
yeah, we'll
time will tell on that.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's knock it out. This date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, on this date in 1919, Tony.
I got no prayer.
Green Bay Packers Football Club was founded also in this date in 1962, groundbreaking for the
it's
NFL.
It's the longest running club in America, right?
Is that right?
I think Green Bay is at least established in the city that it's still in.
Where'd the Bears come from? Bears were in Chicago. When did the Bears get to Chicago?
I don't know, but they were the Staleys or something like that.
They were
that.
The Chicago Staleys,
yeah.
Right, Frank Frangie?
Weren't there the Chicago Cardinals at one point?
Did you have season tickets to the first season?
Well,
the,
I was graduating high school in 1919. That's why I should have remembered that. How that got away from
how
me.
How did you avoid World War One? I want to know how he got out of that. Birthdays on this date, 1983, former Jaguar Adam Podlish. Had to move on from Podlish, had to go draft a punter in the third round.
That's right.
And Tracy Porter, born on this date, about 29 years young, born in 1986. He, of course, picked six against Peyton Manning in Super Bowl 44 to help the New Orleans Saints to victory. And that one, this date in football history, brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, for all your roofing needs, whether it's re-roofs, repairs, in-home, for your business. License number CCC056797 for Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, bringing you this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The dangers of fake football season. Pittsburgh Steelers kicker Sean Swishams, has a torn ACL and will miss the entire 2015 season. Longtime Carolina Panthers, current Baltimore Ravens wide receiver Steve Smith Sr. told the media yesterday that he plans to retire after this year. Smith caught 79 passes for 1,065 yards and six touchdowns last year in his first season with Baltimore, the first season he's been away from Carolina. And the Dallas Cowboys, at least in the short term, are practicing without their top three running backs after Julius Randle left practice yesterday with an oblique strain. Darren McFadden, surprise, surprise, and Lance Dunbar were already missing practice with injuries, which means rookie Gus Johnson had his chance to shine or annoy Mike with his play-by-play.
He screamed about it the whole time. Oh, wait, different Gus, I think. You should be paying attention to whomever totes the rock behind that offensive line.
No doubt.
This year. Frank Frangie's here. He's toting the rock up in the play-by-play booth, the voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars, host of the Frank Frangie Show here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Frank, I got to say, I was on the air when you were on the air on Saturday, so I couldn't hear the entire game broadcast, but the highlights sounded strong, man. Very nice.
It was fun. It was fun just to get back in the booth with the guys. You know, Mike, it was fun to get back in there. You know, it's fun. I mean, you know, sometimes seasons get long. In my newspaper days, I was like, man, I love my job, but whoo, the season's long. Not now. When we got to game 20, I wanted to keep going, so I'm excited to be back, and Jeff and Tony are so, thank you for that, those kind of comments, but Jeff and Tony are so good. You know, just stay out of the way. You know, let the play-by-play guys stay out of the way and let those guys be as good as they are because they're really good.
One thing that Jeff brought up here and also brought up on the broadcast, and I heard J.P. Shatter talking about it on the .com broadcast as well, is just the kicking competition that has caught a lot of people by surprise. And, you know, look, they've got a lot of bigger fish to fry than that, but it's an important one. It is a fan favorite guy in Josh Scobie that we're talking about here. But this kid, Jason Myers, has opened up a lot of eyes with a cannon of a leg, and you get the feeling that he may be kicking for somebody this year in the NFL, whether it's the Jags or not. How do you see this whole thing playing out?
Well, I don't know. It's a great competition. The question is an obvious one. If they're both really good kickers, and it looks like they are, Myers has a great leg, right? So if they're both really good kickers, the question you've got to ask is, do you take the guy that's 23, who can be your kicker for the next 12 years, versus the guy that's 33, who isn't going to be your kicker for the next 12 years? The flip side of that is, as good as Jason Myers is out here in a scrimmage, with 7 seconds left to go in Nashville, down two, can he make the 46-yarder, which Josh Gobe's probably going to make. So I think that's what Dave Caldwell's got to weigh. It's the first time, I think, Mike, that he's had to weigh that, or that any GM's had to weigh that while Josh Scobey was here in a long time.
Yeah, and Tony, you know, obviously they had Mike Hollis for such a long time. They had Scobey, and they had that period in between where they went through a bit of a revolving door. But it just seems to me, I mean, even Jason Myers, who the hell was Jason Myers? You know what I mean? He's a guy from Marist who went to a kicking camp. They weren't scouting him. They kind of stumbled into him. It seems to me that there are a lot of teams that turn over their kickers year to year to year, and they don't really freak out about it. Sweezum gets hurt in Pittsburgh. I don't think if Jay Feely comes in, they're going to be all up in arms. All of a sudden, we can't score 30 points a week now.
Yeah, you're right. So the Sweezums of the world happen all. Now, he's been a really good kicker for them because he kicks in that bad end. He makes them in that bad end, which is hard to do at that stadium. But you're right. The Sweezums come along. But the Scobies don't come along. And the Mike Hollis is that you get young and you keep forever. The question is, the big question is, if you don't keep Jason Myers, does he go become Adam Vinatieri for somebody else? You know, that's one question. And I think they've got to answer that question. For me, I get it. I appreciate it. I don't know that you let Josh Gobe, who's going to be, you're going to be in a bunch of close games this year. Number one, that's how this team is. Number two, that's how the league is, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you let a guy that you know is going to make that 46-yarder in all likelihood get away.
How much, Tony, do you know that as much anymore? With the blocks last year, it wasn't a banner year for Scobie.
Certainly, it was not as good as the 3 or 4 years previous for Scobie. And was it an aberration, or is it a guy whose skills are finally declining a little bit? Who knows? That's a decision that these guys have to make, especially with a young guy that looks the way this guy does in camp.
And, Mike, you're right. He kicked the ball low last year. I think for the first time, he kicked some of those. When you're starting to get too many of them blocked, it's not always the protection. Sometimes you're kicking them low, so it'll be an interesting competition for sure.
It happens from time to time. I know you're getting ready for Friday night, the first preseason game. I know we all had a bunch of big questions coming into preseason, especially along that offensive line. For you, looking at the Steelers coming in on Friday night, what's the big question or two you'd like to see answered coming out of that game?
I want to see a whole quarter of the ones on offense. The defense, I've got a pretty good idea of what I think they are. I think there's some fun competition, Tony. I think the secondary is really fun. I think there's a lot of good players in that secondary, particularly at cornerback. My goodness, there's a lot of good cornerbacks. But I think I've got an idea what they've got defensively. I think I know who they are. I want to see what they are offensively with hopefully the Steelers play their first team defense a whole quarter at least or past that. The Jags play their first team for the whole quarter. I want to see Yeldon behind this line. I want to see which center they're going to play. I want to see Julius Thomas a whole quarter against somebody else's defense. We've wanted to see that since March, right?
Right.
So to me, all the things we've wanted to see, so that's one. I want to see how the receiver thing pans out. Does my man Aurelius Ben get in the mix? Looks like he's their third receiver now.
Big touchdown yesterday from Chad Henne, a bomb down the left sideline, and was the highlight of practice.
And so is he the third guy? So I think the offense, throwing the ball down the field, the improvement of Bortles, it's not rocket science, but everybody else is watching too. But those are the things for me. I've got a pretty good idea of who I think they are defensively. I'm very curious to see who they are offensively.
And look, you're not going to get the best test in week one, but a healthy Pittsburgh has as good a quarterback, running back, wide receiver combo as anybody in the league, I think, right now. The way Ben Roethlisberger, I think he's playing the best football of his career. And, you know, obviously they decided they're going to slow play. They've got 5 preseason games. They're not going to rush these guys out there. They want to see what I think they know what they've got in D'Angelo Williams behind Le'Veon Bell. He's not going to start the year. But I think it is a good test. We're not going to see that much of it, ones versus ones anyway, I think, with Pittsburgh's offense versus the Jags' defense on Friday night. But I will be, even though we think we know what they have, this is as good an offense as just about any you'll face this year in the NFL.
I totally agree with that. And I'll say this. I don't think you're going to see much of Ben, a couple series. I don't know how much of Antonio Brown you're going to see. I do think you're going to see a bunch of Le'Veon Bell because here's the deal. Didn't play last week. You can't play him a lot in weeks 3 and 4 because he's not going to play those first 2 games. So you got to start getting D'Angelo Williams ready and your blockers ready for him. So the time to play Le'Veon Bell, Mike, I think will be the first couple games. So I think you do see some of him. I think you probably see more of him than the other starters. I'm guessing Roethlisberger a few series, maybe half the quarter, same with Antonio Brown. But you're right. While they're in there, you're tested against the elite skill position guys in this league. Totally agree with that.
I mean, Martavis Bryant and Marcus Wheaton give them a nice core with guys that can stretch a field. They've got a little bit of everything right now in that offense. One question, Frank, before we cut you loose defensively, this linebacker core, I think the feeling all of us had coming into training camp was the starters, okay, we can envision them being pretty decent. Question marks about the depth, But the more I'm hearing, the more this coaching staff is pretty happy with some of the guys. Kyrie Fort's a guy that we don't talk much about. Armbrister gets mentioned from time to time. Jeremiah George, we know Leroy Reynolds has a little bit of versatility. You think they may end up the team feeling better about that group than anybody outside the team has any reason to suspect?
To that question, yes. I still don't think it's where they want to be, but you've got to always you manage it and compare it against what you could get in those last couple of days, those cuts. I don't think you're going to get a better player than Kerry Ford and probably Leroy Reynolds, who's had a nice camp, and they do like Thurston Armbrister. He's a guy that they want to keep him, whether they hide him on practice roster and hope, or whether he's the 52nd or 53rd guy. They want to keep him, Mike.
Well, you just let the secret out right now. All the GMs that are listening to this program.
But they like him. I think, I don't know how much George factors in, but Reynolds has had a wonderful camp, and they like Kerry Ford. So I think if you, those guys, and they can hide Armbrister, you said it right. It's not great depth there yet. It really isn't. But it may be better than we thought it might be a month ago.
They think it's better than we probably think.
And you'll see a lot of them on Friday.
Well, no question. And really, in the preseason, when you play your backup linebacker.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that's when you play those guys. And you're going to see them on special teams. But it's better than they thought. That's still a position that you wouldn't mind falling into a guy. That's still a spot, I think. Safety and linebacker are still the two spots you wouldn't mind falling into a guy on a surprise cut.
And
those are the two spots you wouldn't mind.
I've already seen, I'm not looking at the 2016 draft, but I've already seen a couple guys talking about saying that the deepest positions in this upcoming draft are left tackle, linebacker, and quarterback is really thin coming into this one.
I'll tell you this, Tony, back to Mike's question about linebacker. Watch Dan Scuta for as long as he's in there. He does a lot of things. They're going to use him to rush the passer. They're going to use him on all three downs, even when he's not rushing the passer some of the time. He will be, I think, their third nickel guy. If Puz and Telvin are in the game in nickel, he's either going to be rushing the passer or he'll replace one of those guys. We all made a big deal of the throw that Bortles made to Julius Thomas at the right corner of the end, which was a great throw and a great matchup. Scooter was right there, though.
He was.
He really had good. It wasn't about broken coverage. It was just a great pitch and catch by Bortles and Thomas. So I'm very intrigued with Scooter, for sure.
Yeah, and we've heard nothing but good things about him from his league mates, you know, former rivals of his, and nothing he's done so far has led anybody to believe he's not going to live up to it. Frank Frangie, you'll hear him on the call this Friday night here on 1010XL and every afternoon on the Frank Frangie Show with a cast of many. And, of course, on Twitter at Frank_Frangie, spelled just like it sounds.
Just like it sounds.
All right, buddy. Thank you, man.
All right, guys. Thank
you. We'll see you, Frank Frangie, the voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars, stopping by here. Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Let's hear from the head man coming back, Gus Bradley, after practice yesterday, as well as Blake Bortles talking a little bit yesterday. We'll see what he had to say, and we'll bring that to you coming up as we continue live from the Florida Blue practice fields. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Tony, I'm going to extrapolate just from that one run that I saw DJ Yeldon make here on the practice field. He's going to rush for 2,100 yards.
I thought that was Bernard Pierce.
Was it?
He's not. The guy definitely wasn't in a red jersey. And I know Yeldon's in one of those today.
I'm going to say Bernard Pierce is going to run for 1,763 yards this year based on that one run. I saw a flash of a number 4. I thought I had my man back there. Not the case, huh?
I don't think so.
Hey, you're probably right. I did not factor in the contact jersey.
TJ's breaking a lot of long ones today because no one's touching him.
That's true. That was a nice run, though, by Pierce. Pierce has looked better than I really expected him to. And when he got here, I thought, oh, this guy's not going to make the team. He's as pedestrian as they come, but he's shown a little bit of a spark. Kind of like, you know, who used to do that in Jag camp for a couple years? Jordan Todman always seemed to do that, right? Like, and which goes to show you, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the end-all, be-all.
Jordan would make a couple plays every year.
Exactly.
That he was there. There was a couple times where you're like, there it is.
Yeah, that's like the one. That's the one we saw 16 times in practice.
He had that 60-yard touchdown against Tennessee last year on Thursday night. I mean, it's a couple times a year Todman would do something like that.
All right, let's hear from the head coach, the quarterback, and we'll hear Amanda Borges one-on-one with Aaron Colvin coming up momentarily, as well as we go a little training camp roundtable here with you. This was after practice yesterday. We'll start with Gus on who has impressed him defensively on this football team.
Guys like Aaron Colvin are starting to show up more and more. Sip showed up, and our linebacking crew. It's good to see Dan Scuda. I think he's getting more and more understanding of his position.
This is kind of, you know, Gus talking about Saturday night more than anything. I like to hear him saying Sip showed up. You know, the biggest thing I've seen Jonathan Cyprian do in this training camp is lay out Toby Gerhart on a red zone drill. And if he gives you nothing but that, but an intimidating presence, Tony, I saw the guys out here today with the throwback Donovan Darius jersey from the 90s, right? Give me a Donovan Darius type safety. I'll take that right now.
Sure.
You don't have to be, you know, Earl Thomas and be picking off. It'd be nice to get 8 or 10 interceptions, but just give me some impact running plays or run defense plays.
Yeah, just make plays. And I know Saturday night I can remember the play he made on the, I guess it was the two-point conversion attempt, technically, with what they were running down there on goal line after they had scored a couple times, and he broke up the pass one-on-one in the end zone. So, I mean, it's something. We'll see more once we get into the game on a Friday night. Gus Bradley talking after practice yesterday also talked about something that we know, because we got to talk to Julius's dad a little bit out here, that role of a leader that Julius Thomas has embraced on this team, something he didn't feel like he had the opportunity to do in Denver. Gus Bradley talked about Julius and that role for him as a leader on this roster.
Julius Thomas, one of the things he wanted to, you know, work as far as being a leader and portray leadership type qualities, and did a phenomenal job of that.
Yeah, you hear Logman say, I mean, what do you need to see out of this guy? You know, I feel kind of the same way about T.J. Yeldon and the fact that I don't want him to get hurt. Please be careful. Please be careful. But he hasn't played in the NFL. Julius Thomas has been a Pro Bowler. You know what you're going to get out of him on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, you were curious when he was brought here. Okay, is it like you're got that question in the back here? Is he a Peyton Manning creation? And then the first time you see him on the field, you're like,
nah,
this guy's just a stud.
Right. Yeah,
he's just a stud that Peyton Manning got to play with, among many that he has
in
his career.
Sure, exactly. So, all right, moving on, Gus Bradley. Again, just talking about what stood out to him, what impressed him during Saturday night.
It was a really good scrimmage as far as situations for us. We started off a little slow offensively, but I like the mindset, come out, try to run the ball. Defense, I thought, started out playing with a lot of energy. Exactly what we had hoped to see from them, a lot of energy throughout first situation and the backed-up situation. And then I think what was impressive was how the offense came back.
Yeah, and that's fine. What's not impressive is how they started. You can look at both sides of that coin any way you like. But I think one thing that Gus tried to impress upon us yesterday after practice was it's things guys are working on individually at this time. It's that you're not even going to notice necessarily. He said Wisniewski felt like he needed to work more on his strength at the point of attack. And he said that showed up. And it's not something necessarily that you would jump off the page to you, but it's something subtle that Gus is going through with these guys. You need to be better at this. What are you going to do to get better at that? And when he sees that progress, that makes him as happy as anything.
And it's why you have to be careful about judging too much based on anything you're seeing at this time of year, because we don't know what these guys are working on specifically, you know, that they feel like is a weakness. Is that what they're working on in practice today? And they may look bad because they're working on something they feel like is a weakness. So you have to be careful with what you see and what it means in the end, which is why when we talk about the preseason games, they mean a little bit more, because you're going up against another team, and obviously once we get to the regular season, that's when you start making real evaluations on these players. Blake Bortles also talking to the media after practice yesterday. He talked about the improvement he's seen on that offensive line.
You know, I think so far they've been more aggressive. They've had more of a nasty streak to them, and they want to get after guys. You know, our number one thing as an offense is we want to be able to run the football. So they take a lot of pride in that and want to be able to do that successfully.
Yeah, we know Parnell probably plays a big role in that disposition right there. Blake as well, looking ahead to Friday night. You know, the scrimmage is one thing, and on to preseason game number one, what is he looking forward to?
You know, I think just going out and executing, you know, kind of taking the ownership of the offense from, you know, the meeting room to the practice field to a scrimmage situation to a preseason game, and then obviously carry that over to the regular season. So I think wanting to be able to do that, wanting to, we'll get, you know, the next couple of days some looks at some cards and watch some Pittsburgh stuff, you know, kind of have an advantage of them playing a game already.
Ownership of the offense is like Al Gore's lockbox.
We have heard that quite a bit. I think Blake Bortles invented ownership of the offense, much like Al invented something.
Be.
I can't remember what it was.
From Blake Bortles yesterday after practice, also talked about some things to learn from in the scrimmage.
You know, I thought it was good. I thought there was a lot of good stuff to learn from. You know, came out, started slow, we go 3-and-out. Back-to-back series. But I thought the guys did a good job of being resilient and going to the sidelines and making corrections and coming back and doing some productive stuff. So there's definitely some good things to learn from.
All right, finally from Blake, was asked about his approach to play calling and how much involvement the coaches have in that and how the whole system works.
That's one thing that Ole and Nate are really cool about is they want feedback. They want to know, do you like it, do you not like it? You're the one that has to go out there and run it. You know, you're the one that has to do this stuff, so you better be able to own it and feel comfortable with it. So they're really good about that and asking, and it's a good conversation.
I think this is in contrast to last year with Jed Fish. One of the reasons I think Jed Fish is not back is that they didn't focus enough on what Blake was comfortable with, what he did well. He said, we want you to be good at these things, so let's do these things instead of let's simplify this a little bit. Let's maybe not run as much, but let's try to be better at the smaller number of things that we do and repeat them over and over.
And we talked about that a lot last season, but they never did that. And I think that led to some of the confusion that you saw with this team when you talked to these guys on the offensive side that were here last year. I think that led to some of that they kept adding things to the offense throughout the year, and they didn't feel like they were good at the things they were doing the week before yet. And you have a bunch of young guys, their heads are already spinning, and you just keep throwing more at them, and in the end what you were left with was a team that looked confused in the last month and a half of the season, which I think plays a large part in the reason that Jed Fish is no longer here in Jacksonville.
If I had to make a list of the six players that Jaguar fans are most excited about based on the feedback we've gotten, most excited about seeing this year, and I think we're excited about seeing as well, tell me if you disagree with any of these names. The order may be mixed up, but offensively, I think it's Bortles, Allen Robinson, Julius Thomas, TJ Yeldon. You can be excited all you want about improvements on the offensive line. Those are the guys you want to see because you expect them to be your primary source of scoring points.
Sure.
Right? Defense, it's Telvin Smith and Zarin Colvin.
No doubt.
Right? I mean, those are the guys that people, not that they're everyone else has their favorite guy and all that, but those are the people, that, particularly Telvin and Colvin, that people think are going to emerge in hopefully the very near future as not just good players, but league-wide good players, impactful guys,
playmakers,
future Pro Bowler type guys. And Amanda Borges got a minute of Aaron Colvin's time yesterday. Let's listen in.
Amanda Borges here with Aaron Colvin. Aaron, how's training camp been for you so far?
It's going good. I'm making progress, growing every day, so that's the main goal.
It's your second year. Do you feel like you have a lot to prove when you're out there?
No, not really. I'm just trying to play my game and let the rest of it take care of itself.
What have you seen from the defense surrounding you that encourages you to be better every day?
Guys are just playing fast, and guys are just playing with a passion. I feel like guys are really owning it out there, and it's really reflecting on how we're our production.
Do you have any goals for yourself, whether it's for the preseason or for the upcoming season?
Most definitely, but I can't share those.
You can't share those?
A lot of my goals are private. I just like to, once I reach them, if I reach them, I know. If I don't, you will never know.
What is the biggest difference, would you say, between last year's team and this year's team?
I think guys are just really just confident right now. I think guys are really comfortable with the scheme and what the coaches are asking of us, and I think we know what to expect out of ourselves. So I just feel like we've really grown from year two to year three for a lot of us, and year one to two for me.
Are you comfortable out there?
I'm growing. You know, it's still kind of new for me because I'm still learning the outside and inside things. So I'm still trying to grow as a player, but I do feel confidence growing every single day.
Is there one player in particular that you're looking forward to matching up against when you play the Steelers on Friday?
Not really, man. Whoever I go against, I want to shut them down. That's just my mindset all the time.
84, baby. Look out for 84 running around out there, Aaron. Let's see what.
For whatever limited reps he's going to get.
Yeah, you know, two.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't play him. Are you kidding me? I mean, what does Antonio Brown need to prove? But
I think we know what he is.
If you can match up with him right now in today's NFL, you can pretty much match up with anybody.
Yep.
Pretty much. One of the more difficult covers there is in the National Football League, Tony. And, you know, when Aaron Colvin says we're just more comfortable in the scheme, you look, even though there are going to be new starters on defense, they're mostly veteran guys coming in. Odrick and House have played a lot of football in the National Football League. Scuda, guys like that. They're going to pick things up quicker than where on offense you've got, you know, a young A.J. Can battling perhaps for a starting spot. You got a rookie running back in there. Even though you've got some experienced players coming back at wide receiver, they're only second-year players. There are a lot more of those on that side of the football. So,
sure,
you know, there are some new faces on defense, but it does seem that they do, as you would expect in a lot of cases, the defense ahead of the offense, you know, with a young team at
this
stage.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And speaking of second-year guys, one of them just – he's getting the day off, but he's just unwilling to accept it.
Allen Robinson,
yeah, he's
not happy. He's out there, full uniform, just no helmet. They took his helmet away.
And he's going through a little bit of the non-contact drills right now, just working on some route running, that kind of thing. You love seeing that kind of competition
out
of
a guy. He's
fine.
He's not hurt in the least bit. He's just taking a day off and, you know, maintenance, Tony. The GPS numbers must be speaking today as far as that whole situation goes. They monitor that, and they know when to back off certain guys. All right, coming back, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We ask you today, it's kind of inspired by the Madden 16 rankings that gave the Jaguars as an overall team a score of 73, which was second worst in the league, only behind the Tennessee Titans. So we asked you today, how many teams in actuality, and list them for us, do you think the Jags are going to prove to be better than in the win-loss column this season? Answers have varied from one end of the spectrum to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So share your thoughts with us. Still time to get in at 641-1010. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll see what other texts we have that we haven't gotten to so far this morning. And, of course, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, glad you're with us here at the Florida Blue practice field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Will not be a long walk to Field G today. Tony getting some good up close and personal for the fans that did come out today. Final day out here, open to the public tomorrow. And then they put it in the lockbox and all the secret plays start coming out and all the good stuff that they're going to do. They're going to spring on the league this year, Tony.
Yeah.
Of course, we've got preseason game one against Pittsburgh on Friday night. It'll be good to see everybody coming out to the stadium for that one. The enthusiasm level continues to be high. I think ticket sales have been pretty good.
Yeah.
Overall.
Give me week 1 and 3 of the preseason at home. You know, you get the tune-up game in week 3.
You get the one we've been waiting to get back to football.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you get the enthusiasm of it being the first one, because week 2 and 4 of the preseason are just the kind of doldrums weeks. It's like you can't figure out exactly what it is. It's kind of cool to go see the team for the first time if you're hosting that week 2 preseason game, but you've already had a week of it and realized how not football it is.
Right.
You know.
And you're just waiting for week 3 when you're going to convince yourself this is better than anything else we're
going to
get.
And then you have week 4, which is just the worst.
Yes. Unless you're the dude who's trying to, you know, break in that long snapper battle or something like that.
Yeah, there's certainly guys who need that week 4 of the preseason. I'm not one of them.
Right. The Mr. 90 man will be long gone by that time anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm with you. You know, but hey, that's the way it goes. And Tony, all this talk, you know, all these lawsuits against the NFL, all this talk from players, this is crazy, this is way too much, it's so unfair to a system they agreed to with Roger Goodell. If they really try to stand firm in this, I had Maurice Jones-Drew tell me, and I quite frankly don't know if Maurice knows the particulars of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the way he put it, and I'm sure the NFLPA is telling its players these things, is that they were fighting hard to get this removed from Goodell, and the NFL was like, well, the only way you're getting that is if we play 18 games. I don't know how hard they ever fought to have this taken out, because I never heard that kind of rhetoric, that this was a big deal. Because, quite frankly, how many guys does it impact, right? A dozen a year or something like that, or less than that? So they're on some unfair practices? Well, what's more fair, focusing on these 12 to 20 guys that have probably done something wrong, right, to put themselves in a bad spot and maybe cut down the amount of discipline they get from Roger Goodell, or to do something that benefits the other 1,800 players in the entire National Football League?
Sure.
So, I continue to hear all this stuff. This has got to change. Well, they're not giving it up for nothing. Guarantee you that. The NFL is not just going to say, well, you know what, we'll give you a free win here.
That's
in our
right.
Next
you
round
bargained poorly enough in the past that you got nothing to give.
Right.
It's just you got, as the players, what do you have except your ability to say, we're not going to play for that.
Right.
We're not going to do it. And every time that they get to that point, they all say the same thing. Oh, there's no way we're not going to play. Like, if you're not willing to not play, then you're going to take the deal that is offered to you in the end.
Exactly.
And they know it, too. The owners and league know it, too.
Well, that's why I told Morris. I said, if you really want it, just don't show up. Well, we can't do that. Well, then they know that,
yeah.
Right? And you're dead. You got no chance, all right? Tony, fan feedback spotlight today. We want a list, baby. We want them all. We want to know exactly who the Jaguars are better than.
Yeah.
In your eyes.
Everyone loves a good list.
Why
as
not?
As we've said from time to time.
It does happen, but we like it when you generate one with your own independent thought. And we asked you today, based on the Madden rankings, Madden NFL 2016, which is always the barometer, I'm sure, right? Why not?
You can't get past
why
it.
Even play the season, Tony, right? Let's just simulate it on Madden. But they have the Titans as the only team rated worst than the Jaguars. By the way, Julius Thomas, the highest rated player, I think, with a score of 89. Sindarik Marks got an 87 on defense.
And notably, Houston had a higher team rating than Indianapolis.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I guess if you're looking at the strength of every position, but it just goes to show you the importance of the quarterback position. Because if you go player by player, they may have a better team at more positions than Indy, but not even close at the most important one on the field.
No,
so what did folks tell us today?
Here's what we got from Chris. I can't list all 31 teams in one tweet, gentlemen. Hashtag overly optimistic.
We'll go with all.
Irish Jaguars 16-0 to 19-0 doesn't leave much room for doubt, to be honest. From Frank, Houston, Tennessee, Cleveland, the Jets, Arizona, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Chicago, right, St. Louis, Washington, and Kansas City. Not the Raiders, he lists notably. He apparently thinks the Raiders are going to be good this year.
Arizona, man, I tell you what, what are they missing much of if Carson Palmer stays healthy this year?
I don't know. I agree with you. From Black Dog Express, we will be better than the Titans, Bears, Redskins, Browns, and about five more. But he didn't bother to list.
I'm not sure which ones.
From Will, we got Tennessee, Buffalo, and San Francisco. From No Limits, Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Oakland, Washington, San Francisco, the Jets, Cleveland, Houston, and Carolina. So a second-place finish in the division for the Jags, according to No Limits. From Daniel, Bills, Jets, Browns, Texans, Titans, Oakland, the Redskins, Bears, Saints, and 49ers. So, again, a second-place finish in the division.
Why not?
From Demetrius, the Bills, Browns, Titans, Texans, Raiders, Redskins, Bears, Bucks, 49ers, a 7-9 record.
See, I think he really put thought into that list.
I honestly do,
looking at Demetrius's list.
I do, too. From Duval Doom, Duval, 19-0, we're better than all of them.
Atta baby.
All right, from David, Titans, Texans, Falcons, Saints, Bucks, Jets, Browns, Redskins, Bears, 49ers, Rams, and the Raiders. A lot of people have them better
than... Tough division for the Rams. That's a team on the rise, it appears.
From Dino, Oakland, the end. From Only Gators, or excuse me, from Jason, our record will be better than all teams ever.
We're going to play an extra 20th game.
We are so deep that we keep two kickers. Hashtag Kobe Bryant, hashtag Magic
Kickoff
Myers.
Specialist, man.
That's right. And from Hardy Bro, we got Houston, Tennessee, Oakland, Cleveland, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, and the Jets, hashtag realistic.
Wouldn't you love, who was that kicker? Was it a kicker or a punter that Miami used to have, the Hurricanes? Who was that big boy they had down there, JJ? The guy used to lay people out on, I think it was a punter. He used to lay some dudes out on punt coverage, right? And what if you're like the kicker, and this is your last shot, and you're like, coach, just try me on coverage. Just throw me out there, right? If I don't make it, you know you want my leg to kick off.
Yeah.
But let me go out there on punt coverage and show you what I can do. Because if I get hurt, you still got a kicker.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I'm gonna add some value to the team.
I guess.
Haven't seen that happen, Tony. Damon on Facebook said 73 rating sucks. So much disrespect, huh? But we'll be better than 25 other teams. They'll either respect us this year or we'll beat it out of them. The time is now. Chris Brown said, wow, 73, come on. 75 at least. I'm with you, Chris. 75 at least, which would probably put them better than like three teams on the Madden rankings. And Josh Williams went with the Florida Gators that they'll be better than. And Dustin said, Peter Griffin led London Silly Nannies.
There you go.
There you have it.
Chapoopy.
Little sampling for
that girl is hard to get.
And then Doug listed, I guess, let's see, the Browns, the Washington Red Pandas, I guess is what he's referring to them as, the Bucks, the Jets, the Titans, the Bills, the Niners, the Raiders, the Vikings, and the Texans, hashtag Jaguars today, hashtag who needs a top 10 pick. Well, not us, baby. We need a bottom 10 pick. We need the 31st pick in the draft. You know why? Because the Patriots don't get one. we get the last one of round one as the Super Bowl champs here, Super Bowl 50 out in Santa Clara. All right, wrapping up another day, day two of this week, and wrapping up tomorrow, week two of training camp as far as our field side broadcasts go, Tony. Again, it's been a lot of fun and great to be able to bring you a wide variety of opinions on different observers of the Jags today. Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union stopping by. Jeff Loggeman of the Jaguars broadcast crew, and he'll be back with us regularly starting next Tuesday
yeah.
for full 2 hour shows again starting up next Tuesday and all through
tape
the
review,
NFL
baby.
Season. Love that. And also Brent Martineau, proving that he doesn't hate you as much as long as I'm around. And Frank Franchi stopping by, the voice of your Jaguars. Got to hear a little bit from Gus Bradley, Blake Bortles, and Amanda Borges with Aaron Colvin as well. Hoping to catch a Big Bo tomorrow. I know he's out here today.
I saw him out here today.
I'll see if he's going to be out here tomorrow, and we'll see if we can grab a few minutes of Pacelli's time. And I know some folks out here keen to get his observations on the offensive line, as good an authority as you will find out there. Tony, that does it for us today. You got Fat Tuesday tonight coming up?
Yeah, 8 to 10 tonight, following the ladies' helmets and heels, and we'll talk about the game coming up on Friday night against the Steelers. And I found a couple, you may or may not know, I've grown up a Giants fan, and I have a book that's an archive of a bunch of articles from New York papers talking about the Giants from the time they were founded up until basically Lawrence Taylor went into the Hall of Fame. And I found a couple really kind of cool articles about Frank Gifford that I may share some of the clips from that tonight on the show as well.
Cool. I'll look forward to that coming up tonight. And I will look forward to talking to you on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio today as Tony breaks down the Jags from a fantasy perspective with
yeah.
us this afternoon at about 6:35. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to all the aforementioned. Thanks to Tyler Devitt for Joe Fortunata. JJ the intern getting some love here on the broadcast. He's out here sweating with us every single day that we've been out here at training camp. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hello to XL Primetime. They are straight ahead. Thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday sponsor here on Jaguars today. And we'll say hello to Hacker, T-Wig, and Joe C. Coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!